a look at current industry trends from an Air Safety Foundation road warrior. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Pat Schaub. Pat is a former Marine Corps aviator. He's flown helicopters. He's a CFI in airplanes and helicopters. Lives in Texas. For 18 years, he's been a contract instructor for the AOPA Air Safety Foundation. And the reason that we're talking to Pat right now is because he just finished up doing one of the ASF seminars in the Portland, Oregon area. And Pat, thanks for taking a few minutes out at the end of what it's been a very long day for you.
It's been a long day, but I work in the evening, so I had the morning off and I enjoy my travel, so it was fun.
I wanted to talk to you because I think the job of an ASF instructor, especially somebody who conducts these seminars, is an interesting thing to do. Tell us how you got started in it and how it's changed over the 18 years you've been doing it.
Well, I worked in the state of Texas for the Texas Aeronautics Commission, and one of the things I was hired to do was start a flight instructor refresher clinic. Actually, it had been in force, but I had been working to run it. And after a few years of doing it, I suggested that we move to working with AOPA. And I did the flight instructor refresher clinic in concert with AOPA. And then I moved on to a career as an EMS helicopter pilot. And when I moved on, the state of Texas let the flight instructor clinic go away, and AOPA asked me if I'd stay on with them and keep working as an instructor in their flight instructor clinic. And one thing led to another, and then they started asking me to do these safety seminars, and I do pilot town meetings with Phil Boyer, and assorted kind of travel presentations, that sort of thing.
Now you can't do this kind of thing just for the pay. What do you find the value to be in these seminars? We've heard criticisms, even from frustration within ASF, that not enough pilots come out to these seminars. How do you see that going? Is it the same people you see over and over? Do you think you're reaching new people? And is this a personally satisfying thing to do?
Well, actually, we got to go back to the first thing. You said I don't do it for the pay. Yes, I do. I do it strictly for the pay. It's sort of big bucks is the main reason that I do it. No, actually, it's real satisfying to know that maybe something I say will save somebody's life. And I had one gentleman actually tell me that something that I had said at the last safety seminar actually saved his life. And that's after you hear somebody say that, you go, wow, I think I want to keep doing that. So I do, and I do it for that satisfaction.
Now, you related that anecdote in tonight's session, and you talked about someone who carried a business card in his pocket and had the presence of mind to cover up his gyro when it failed in the panel and was able to function in a situation where he had that piece of equipment fail. Do all the instructors who do this, I know a lot of the guys who do these seminars have been doing it for a long time, do they all come back with stories, or is it kind of rare to find out a personal situation where you've actually had an impact like that?
No, I don't know if other people have come back and told me that they've been in places where they had somebody come back and say that, oh, what you told me saved my life. I think most of us teach using stories. It's an effective way to teach. All of the people that do this are experienced aviators, and a lot of the people that we talk to are not as experienced, so anything that we have to offer is kind of like gems for them. But there's also an awful lot of very qualified aviators that come to these things. I think one reason that they have the gray hair and they've been in the aviation industry a long time is they recognize that every flight can be the next flight can be their last one, and they pay attention too. So I don't know. I don't know if other people have had the same kind of experiences I have, where people have come back and said, what you said saved my life. But I know that other people get the same kind of rewards out of it I do. So I wouldn't be surprised if they told me that.
A lot of the material that goes into these seminars comes out of the NOL report. And I wonder, in your experience, I haven't been around aviation, frankly, for enough years to have a perspective on this. Has the crunching of data, the forensics that go into figuring out why bad things happen to pilots, has that improved over the years? Is the information better than it used to be?
I'm not a number cruncher guy, and I'm one of the first to say I say it regularly during my clinics. My math skills are so weak. I married a math teacher to make up for my bad math skills. But the information that's culled out of the NTSB reports ends up in the NAHL report, and Bruce Landsberg in particular is really good at sorting through, and the Air Safety Foundation in general is really good at sorting out the facts and telling the story from the facts. And well, summing it up, like the presentation I did tonight, they said that there are five main accident causes, five main factors that cause general aviation pilots to die in aircraft crashes. And in the year 2005, 251 of the crashes were due to these five factors. And if you took these factors away, it would have lessened the accident rate by 80%. Well, that kind of thing, if you think about those numbers, yeah, I think they've done a pretty good job of culling those numbers. I don't know whether they're better at it or not, but I know that the way that the Air Safety Foundation gives me those figures to work with, if I can understand it, certainly the people that I'm talking to can. And I think we're better at presenting what comes out now than we used to be. We're not looking at columns of figures anymore and letting people draw their own conclusions. We're giving them some things to think about that, well, might end up saving their life.
My guest today is Pat Schaub, who is an instructor, contract instructor for the Air Safety Foundation. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to this Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. My guest today is Pat Schaub, who is a contract instructor for the Air Safety Foundation. We're talking because I just finished attending a seminar, one of the Air Safety Foundation seminars, which I would encourage you to do, too, when it comes to your area. These are great things. They're free. You have a chance to win a handheld. There's other door prizes, and it all in all is an unprecedented entertainment value. But what I want to talk to you now about, Pat, is you are a veteran helicopter pilot and instructor. You have this interesting perspective on the contribution to the industry that the military has traditionally made over the years of providing a conveyor belt of high-time helicopter pilots coming in at a young age, and that conveyor belt's kind of drying up. A big story in the past couple weeks has been the collapse of Silver State Helicopters, and while they've been widely criticized for some of their business practices, you told me you thought that they were fulfilling an important need. Expand on that just a little bit.
Well, I admire entrepreneurs. I see myself as one, and I know, you know, it takes a great deal of spine to start a business on your own, and something on the scale of the Silver State helicopter schools, that was really pretty incredible. And say what you will about, you know, the people who were left high and dry and with big student loans and so forth, when a company goes out of business, nobody's happy about it. But Silver State and anybody else who starts a helicopter school is really helping out the American economy. You know, back after the Vietnam War, actually during and after the Vietnam War, there were a lot of 19, 20, 21-year-old veterans coming out of the military and taking jobs flying for nearly nothing, flying helicopters. And one of the things that's really picked up since the Vietnam War is the value of saving lives in the air ambulance industry. And if you look now, compare the coverage the United States had in air ambulances back in the 60s. They didn't even have them then, 60s, 70s. Then it got into the 80s and 90s. Now, they overlap one another, and there's a lot of people whose lives are being saved because, you know, that golden hour from being traumatically injured to getting into surgery, that's a time where you better get somebody in quick or they won't make it. And they're making it now because of helicopters. The guys who were flying them, present company included, I didn't fly in Vietnam, but I just barely missed that. So I'm on the cusp of the Vietnam generation. And guys with my experience just aren't out there anymore. I ran a couple of air ambulance operations, and I had a hard time finding people with the skill set and the number of hours necessary to be able to fly an air ambulance helicopter. And, you know, the folks who are flying offshore in the S-92s and the S-76 C++s and the Bell 412s, the big heavy and medium twin helicopters, well, where are you going to find those people? I think anybody who starts a helicopter flight school is really contributing toward our economy.
Well, now let's talk about the big key in all this, for me anyway, is what you said about finding somebody with the experience of the hours necessary to do this job. Now, a lot of people coming out of, small helicopter schools who have, 80 or 100 hours and a certificate aren't really equipped to even get their foot in the door, because if only for insurance purposes, you can't really start to do any of this kind of work with less than 1,000 hours. And you were telling me earlier that 1,000 hours isn't really enough.
You know, I've been sitting here listening to you winding up to ask me a question of which I don't know the answer. I really don't know where the helicopter pilots are going to come from. They're not coming out of the military. The guys in the military have an extended tour in the military. If they get their wings in the military and they fly a military helicopter, it's not a civilian helicopter. If you're flying a Black Hawk, you've got power like crazy in those things, and most of the civilian helicopters they fly can't hold a candle to them, so they're completely different, really. I really don't know what the answer is going to be as far as how we're going to be able to fill that void. And, you know, somebody who gets a private, commercial, and even a CFI, they still don't have 1,000 hours of helicopter time. And I know when I was hiring pilots for an EMS operation, I wouldn't even consider somebody who didn't have less than 2,500 hours. And most of the pilots that I did hire had a good deal more. And even so, when I was flying that way, it called on every skill I ever learned to be able to fly in that environment. And you look at the accident rate in the air ambulance industry, particularly the helicopter air ambulance industry, even among very experienced pilots, it's really high. And the reason is they're going beyond the level of their experience, I think. They're flying into instrument conditions. They're not up to speed on flying on instruments. A lot of those operations aren't instrument. I don't know what the answer is. We need more helicopter pilots. I don't know where they're going to come from.
Now, in fixed-wing flying, you know, the airlines, Boeing had a figure that they think that we're going to need, I think the number was 18,000 pilots per year in the industry for the next, I don't know, 10, 15 years, whatever the study, however far out it went. And the airlines now, one of the big complaints from Part 141 flight schools is that their good instructors, as soon as they hit that 250-hour mark, the regionals are plucking them out, and they're pairing them up with more experienced captains to get them, I guess, scenario-based training is the buzzword, but they want to put them into the actual conditions where they're going to learn the ropes not only of the airplane and of flying, but of the company and the process. Is there any analog to that in the helicopter world?
I don't know about that. I was sitting again thinking while you were talking about that scenario-based training. I don't know if I like sitting in the back of an airliner that is a scenario-based trainer.
Yeah, right.
That's kind of frightening to think about. As far as the helicopter side of things, I think what you're getting at is there are going to be people my age and maybe a little older. Most of the guys that are a little older than me are retiring from the helicopter business, but guys my age and maybe a little younger are flying bigger helicopters, like flying out in the Gulf in an S-92 or an S-76, and they put somebody my age and experience in the right seat as the captain, and then they take somebody with very few hours and put them in the other seat. When guys my age retire, they're going to be replaced by somebody who's got 500, maybe 1,000 hours, and it's all in that same ship.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I on a positive note, I can't imagine a better time to be wanting to get into the aviation business, because we need so many pilots, and we need them across the board. We need helicopter pilots, we need airline pilots, we need people who fly 135 operations, and they just aren't out there. I think what's going to have to happen is the industry is going to have to pay what it takes to get people to the people of the caliber that they need to fly.
Well, if nothing else, if you have to come in with 1,000 hours and you have to get it on your own, they're going to have to pay a salary that's adequate for you to pay back a big old student loan.
Yeah, absolutely. So I talked to a guy today. He worked with me in my state job, and he decided to go out and chase the dream and quit his state job and went and got all his ratings and flew with a commuter and then flew with TWA. And you know what happened to TWA? They folded up. And then he realized, I can't fly for $30,000. You know, I've got to raise two children, and now you're lucky if you get $30,000 and you don't have a retirement, and the retirement accounts have all been robbed by the major airlines, and you know, Delta doesn't have one, Northwest doesn't have one, and guys who flew with them for a long time now don't have retirements. People aren't going to continue to take that kind of abuse as much as they may want to fly. So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a middle ground, and the airlines and the people who need pilots are going to have to start paying to reimburse the people who are going to have the skill level necessary to do the job.
Well, Pat, it's always fun to talk to somebody who has a lot of background and experience in these things and get a perspective. And I really personally want to thank you and tell you how much I appreciate the instructors who do what you do, because these seminars, again, I'll stress it for our listeners who haven't been to one, these ASF seminars are a well-spent evening. And thank you very much for taking some time out with us today.
Hey, thanks very much. I appreciate you letting me voice my opinions. It was a lot of fun.
Pat Schaub is a contract instructor for the AOPA Air Safety Foundation. You can find out more about the seminars going on around the country right now at asf.org. And you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.